I believe it was Willie had a lesson on Matthew 5, verses 13 and 14. You're the salt and the light of the world. And then last week, or 2 weeks ago, Bill Ingram Jr. had a lesson on leaven. You remember that? I think it was Matthew 13, where the woman, you know, hid the leaven in the loaf, and then talked about the influence of that leaven. And then he also looked over at Matthew 16 and the fact that leaven can also be a negative influence, talking about the Pharisees and the influence they had. So influence is the topic of the class. I haven't been in all the classes. The deacons had a special class just for us. So as far as I know, though, that's been the topic all the way along, is the influence of that Christians have on the world. Back up. I can't see everybody. Y'all don't move forward. Don't mess with me. Wow, okay. Now I feel like I've left you guys. But anyway, today we're going to do a little bit different. Today we're going to not look at the influence that Christians have, but we're going to look at the influence that Christ has had on the world, and the Bible has had on the world. So it'll be a little bit different, because we'll also be looking not just at the Bible itself and verses, but also just some examples from the world itself. There is not a lot of space on this thing. The deity of Christ, just the fact that Christ has had such a great influence in the world, and the fact that the Bible is so influential, speaks itself to the fact that it's authentic. We've had skeptics and people say that Christ is not deity ever since the beginning, right? Ever since Christ was on the earth, you've had people saying that he wasn't who he was, and yet we still have today, the church is still in existence, and we've had many people make quotes about the church ending, and in 100 years people won't believe in Jesus and that kind of thing, and yet here we are today. That alone says a lot about Christ and about the Bible. But if we just step back and we look away from not just what the Bible says, but if we look at just the influence that maybe somebody from outside would have, you know, just looking at Christ, someone that wasn't a Christian, they can't deny the impact that he's had. Just this last week, we looked at the Silencing of God seminar with Dave Miller, and we looked at a lot of famous quotes from a lot of famous people in our country's history. And we think about the founding fathers, and we think about the presidents. And as I was preparing the lesson, I got to thinking about the president specifically because of last week. And, this country's had 42 individuals. We're about to elect our 44th president, but Grover Cleveland served twice. So we've had 42 presidents. And, you know, I wonder how many of us in this room could name all of them. You know, I wonder how many of us in this room could, you know, put half of them in order, you know, or pick out 5 or 6 or maybe 10 and say, this is what they did for our country. You know, there's a few that stick out, obviously, that you have, like, this was their impact. But you think about during the time of their presidency, everybody in the country knew who they were, you know. Everybody possibly in the world, you know, in other parts of the world, also knew who they were and what they were doing in this country and what was going on and the massive amount of influence they had, right? Everybody talked about the president. What's going on? What's happening in the economy? You know, it's not just today. It was happening, you know, 200 years ago, and yet we can't even name them all. So you start to think about the impact that Christ had versus that. We think about, well, who else in our society today, you know, has huge impacts on what we see and think? So I thought, okay, well, movie stars, right? You think, well, you can't even go down the aisle in the grocery store. You're waiting there to check out, and you see who's dating who, who's put on 5 pounds, who's lost 5 pounds, and who's lost 45 pounds. You know, it's you're bombarded, you know, with this information, and yet we think how influential they are. You know, over the decades, actors have pushed certain agendas. They've said, oh, I'm going to get involved with this social work, or I'm going to get involved with this movement, and they're going to push certain things, and yet we don't even remember what it was that they were pushing, you know, now. You know, I was thinking, well, how influential are they in our society, really? And I got to thinking, well, I don't even know who won the Best Actor Award last year. You know, maybe you all do, I don't know, but I doubt all of us could name it, because I can't, so we're already lost. But, you know, who did what 15 years ago? Who was the big name 25 years ago? That kind of thing. And so we think, wow, they're a huge influence on our society today. And we talked about last week about some of the things, and we say, Hollywood is pushing this, Hollywood is pushing that. And yet, you know, 50 years ago, Hollywood was pushing something. We don't even know what they were pushing. Yet Christ and what he was teaching, his influences, are still here 2,000 years later. And just as strong now as they were then. So just to try and say, hey, you know, from the outside, if you're not a Christian, what is the influence of Christ? Everybody knows about Christ, right? Everyone knows about Jesus. Yet, all of this happens, and some of this is facetious, I know, but we have no photograph of him, right? We have no audio clips. We have no TV programs, you know, no TiVo recordings of any of his sermons. But, you know, they did have papers and pencils, right? We have no pictures, no sketches. He didn't even write his own, an autobiography. So everything we know about him is from his followers. You know, he was so influential that these men, through the inspiration of God, wrote down the information about his life and about his teachings. And that's what we have from him. Okay. Christ, within 50 years, we'll get back to the Bible now, within 50 years of his death, you know, at the most, say 100 years from his death or his birth, whichever, that's pretty close, right? Anyway, within 100 years or so, his teachings were everywhere, right? We look at Colossians 1:23. If you want to turn there, I'm just going to read it. When Paul was writing to the church at Colossae, he writes, I should catch up with my notes. That'd be useful. It says, if indeed you continue in the faith, this is Paul writing to the church, if indeed you continue in the faith, grounded and steadfast, and are not moved away from the hope of the gospel, which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven. So what does he say was preached? The gospel was preached to every creature under heaven. Paul, also writing to the Philippians, at the end of the Philippian letter, he indicates to us that the gospel had reached all the way to Caesar's home itself. It says in Philippians 4:22, all the saints greet you, especially those who are of Caesar's household. So you see this influence just being massive across the whole region, and, well, it says under heaven. In John chapter 12 and verse 19, we see the Pharisees talking there, and it says, the Pharisees talking among themselves, they say, look, the whole world has gone after him. Here's the religious leaders of that time, and they step back, and what they see, so many people following him, that they say, you know, there's nothing we can do. The entire verse says, you see that you are accomplishing nothing. Talking about what they're doing. You know, we can't stop this. This is beyond us. This is too big. The whole world's gone after him, right? So this, it was a huge, huge influence he had on the time. But as we turn to the New Testament and we start to look at Christ's life, when we first turn and we say, well, I want to read about this guy that people talk about. So we turn over to Matthew and we look at the beginning there, and we learn about his birth, right? Matthew chapter 2, we read about the wise men coming, and that's about it, right? We're trying to figure out, well, where's the big fanfare? Okay, Christ is, this guy Jesus, I keep calling him Christ, but he is the Christ, right? But his name was Jesus, right? So Jesus was born, and we didn't have people playing the trumpets in the street, and there was no huge parades, and you may think that sounds facetious, but I imagine that when a king's child was born, or when the Caesar had a child or something, I would imagine there was big parades and parties and that types of things to celebrate. And yet we have almost nothing here. We have the wise men that come, and when we read about the wise men and they come to Herod and they talk to him, does he sound like, oh yeah, I heard about it. We're having a party next week about this guy. No, Herod's like, who? Who was born? What? So, you know, it wasn't a huge thing. We look at, but who was celebrating, right? When we look at Luke chapter 2, we see the angels, right, where they had come and talked to the shepherds, and it talks about them singing, and, you know, they knew that something great was happening. But the world itself at that time, you know, it wasn't a big deal. Here, who knew that this baby was going to have the influence it did, right? As we jump forward into his ministry, we look at Matthew chapter 4. Go ahead and turn there. Matthew chapter 4. We're going to look at verses 23 through 22. It says, "And Jesus went about Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing all kinds of sickness, all kinds of disease among the people. Then his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all sick who were afflicted with various diseases and torments, and those who were demon-possessed, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. Great multitudes followed him, from Galilee, from Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and beyond the Jordan." From this, what I wanted to pull out, and we'll look at this later, is it says that great multitudes followed him. Great multitudes. It also says they weren't just from one place. It wasn't from maybe this one town where he is at and he got this small following. It says great multitudes followed him, verse 25, from Galilee, from Decapolis, from Jerusalem, from Judea, and beyond the Jordan. So this guy, and this is Matthew chapter 4, right? Matthew's got 28 chapters in it. This is at the beginning of his ministry, and he's got these multitudes of people following him. If we look at Matthew chapter 7, verse 28 and 29, it says, "And so it was, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his teachings. For he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes." Now this is at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. So we've had these starting back in chapter 5. We've had chapter 5, chapter 6, and now chapter 7, where he's been teaching these people. And what is their comment about him? They say, he teaches as one who has authority. They knew that something was different about this guy, right? He wasn't just as a regular religious leaders, and they even say, not as the scribes. As we look on, continue reading, we just move right into the next chapter, chapter 8, verse 1. "When he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean.' And then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, 'I am willing, be cleansed.' And immediately his leprosy was cleansed." What I want to pull out here is you see that the leper came to him. And I'm going to just move on. But remember the fact that he was here, he had been teaching, and then he came down from the mountain where he had been teaching, and the sick started to come to him. In verse 4, we read about a centurion soldier. Let me see. And Jesus, let's see, where are we at? Chapter 4, verse 4. Praise now. Oh, verse 8. Verse 8, and then where does it start? And Jesus said, "I will come and heal him." Verse 5. Okay, verse 5. "Now when Jesus had entered into Capernaum, a centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, 'Lord, my servant is lying at home, paralyzed, dreadfully tormented.' And Jesus said to him, 'I will come to him and heal him.' And the centurion answered and said, 'Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak the word, and my servant will be healed.'" This is a man that was a man that was over other people, as we would continue reading. But you see here that the centurion came to him. And I'm going to come back to that. I'm trying to pull out some things that I'm going to tie together here in a moment. In chapter 9, verse 20, Matthew chapter 9, verse 20, it says, "And suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she said to herself, 'If only I may touch his garment, I may be made well.' But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, he said, 'Be of good cheer, daughter, for your faith has made you well.' And the woman was made well from that hour." Okay, now I want us to think about the verses that we've just read and notice that these people were coming to him to be healed, right? They knew that there was something special about this guy. He wasn't getting up and making these speeches or sermons or talks or teachings and then saying, "Now you've heard my great lesson. if anybody needs to be healed, you know, come forward, and you know, I'll take care of your needs and so forth. It was a matter of, as he went about, people were saying, Jesus is here, Jesus is here. And they were coming to him because they knew that he was different, right? They knew that he was unlike anyone that they'd ever seen or they had ever heard of. I think it's important, too, though, that we look at Jesus did not only just teach and do these things for the poor and for the uneducated. You know, I've heard it said, well, you know, you follow Christianity, that's for ignorant people, you know, or it's for people that are uneducated because they don't understand how things really work in this world. And so it's for those that maybe don't understand things. And yet, as we look at the Bible and we look at the people that also came to him, we'll see that that was not the case. Let's see, we've already read about the centurion, right? The centurion who was a military leader, you know, someone who was an officer in the army. So this person was probably educated. He definitely wasn't poor, right? Because it talks about him having servants. As we also read about in Matthew chapter 9, when we read about the woman touching his garment, right? We just read that where she came and touched his garment. But look up a few verses above that. Let me see, Matthew chapter 9. I believe it's around 18. Yeah, 18. When he spoke these things to them, behold, a ruler came and worshipped him, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hands on her, and she will live. So Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. So when the woman came, he was on his way to this ruler's house. Okay, here's someone that obviously is not poor and destitute and just trying to find somebody to feed him some bread. This is someone that's in a place of power and wealth. And we read on in that where that Jesus did go, and everyone had thought that this ruler's daughter had died, but after Jesus got there and got through with it, right, she wasn't dead anymore. We also can look at John chapter 4 and verse 46. There we read about a story that we're familiar with. John chapter 4, verse 46. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. 4, verse 46, let's see. And so Jesus came again to Cana of Galilee, where he had made the water into wine. And there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. And when he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea into Galilee, he went to him. And he implored him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. So, you see, here is someone else who is in power, who is seeking out Jesus, who's going to him. Matthew 19, 16 through 22. You can turn there if you want to, Matthew 19, 16 through 22. But I'm just going to refer to it. This is where we've read about the rich young ruler, right? We all know that story where he came and he says, what can I do? And Jesus says, you know, keep the law. And he says, I've done all that. And he says, well, you know, sell possessions. And then the guy went away sad. Here was a rich man, okay? It says he was rich, he was young, he was a ruler, he had everything. And yet, what was he seeking? He was seeking the advice of Jesus, this man that had nothing as far as this world was concerned. And here are these people that are in power seeking him out. We'll look at a few more examples. Matthew 19 and verse 9, we read about Matthew himself. And we know that Matthew was a tax collector. And generally, tax collectors were pretty well off just because of their job. And so here you have another example of someone wealthy. And I know this list is maybe tedious, but, you know, it's frustrating when people say, oh, you believe that, and that's for such and such. That's for uneducated, but that's for the poor people. You know, you can see that Jesus got followed around by these people that just wanted to be fed food. And yet, you can always come back to the Bible and say, that's not the case. I got example after example after example of people that just weren't after food. You know, that they weren't just saying, oh, this guy is charity, you know, a charity worker, and I can get something from that. Luke chapter 19, verse 1 through 4. This one we learned in our Bible classes. The wee little man, Zacchaeus, right? It says that he was very wealthy. Talks about him being able to give away half of his wealth, and then still being able, if he had cheated anybody, to give them four times what he would have taken if he had cheated a man. So this man was extremely wealthy, and Jesus was even, I don't know if you'd say persecuted or accosted, because he was even eating with the man. And lastly, we'll look at John chapter 3, verse 2. John chapter 3 and verse 2. This man came to Jesus by night. I guess we start in verse 1. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. This man came to Jesus by night, and he said to him, "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God, for no one can do these signs that you do unless God is with him." So here's a man. You know, we've talked about rich people. We've talked about people that are wealthy. Rich and wealthy, it's kind of the same thing, right? But we've also talked about people that are, I guess you would say at the time, thought of as spiritually wealthy, or, very educated in the faith. And yet, Nicodemus himself comes and says, "We know that your teachings, you know, that you are from God, based on the things that you do, the signs and the wonders." So the people understood everywhere. They understood that Jesus was from God. Now, I mentioned before about multitudes. If you remember when we read a little bit earlier, and I said I'll get back to that. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 14. Matthew 14, we're going to look at, I don't know if we'll read the whole thing, but 13 through 23. I guess we might as well. Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 23. It says, "When Jesus heard it, he departed from there by boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the multitude heard it, they followed him on foot from the cities. And when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them, and he healed their sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, 'This is a deserted place, and the hour is already late. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves food.' But Jesus said to them, 'They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat.' And they said to him, 'We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, 'Bring them here to me.' And then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. Looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples. And the disciples gave to the multitudes. So they all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of the fragments that remained. Now those who had eaten were about 5,000 men, besides the women and the children." Let's see. Yeah. "And immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat, go before him to the other side. And while he sent the multitudes away, and when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into the mountains by himself to pray. And then when the evening came, he was there alone." In this section that we've read, the word multitude is there 6 times. And yet, when we read how many people were that, it says 5,000 men. Now, we've read a couple other verses where I said, remember it says multitudes, remember it says multitudes. The multitudes followed him. The multitudes came down from the mountains. Here, we're given a number, right? 5,000 men. We're also given a number in the next chapter, chapter 15. It says 4,000 men. And maybe you've noticed this before too, but it's pretty easy to remember, right? Chapter 14 is 5,000 men, and chapter 15 is 4,000 men. So anyway, that's, y'all can keep that one. You got it, right? Okay, Sue, you look confused, but all right. Anyway, it says multitude, right? Not just in this place where it says multitude, 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 and it says 5,000 men. And then we looked at all the other places. It said a multitude followed him, a multitude followed him. I mean, we don't know how many people were following this guy around. It talked about earlier where they were from Jerusalem and Judea. And he talked about he went through all of Syria. And it said the multitudes followed him, the multitudes followed him. All right, I mean, this guy could have been walking around with 5,000 men all the time. You know, maybe not obviously all the time. Well, who knows? But lots and lots of people were following him. This just wasn't a small band of people that come into town. You know, and you got these 30 or 40 people, or Jesus walking around with the 12 apostles. I mean, you had hundreds and possibly thousands of people when he would come somewhere were there. Now, I imagine that it wasn't the same 5,000 people following him around like groupies, but everywhere he went, the people that were in that area,
came out, and it was thousands of people. Because this guy was special, right? He was different. He was different than anyone that had ever lived. Let's see. Yes. Now, he wasn't doing this so that he could get rich, right? He wasn't going around and saying, you come out, I'm going to have a tent show on Saturday night. Come out, I'm going to do all kinds of miracles, and everybody throw some money in the bucket. And then, you know, our little bandwagon is going to move on to the next place, kind of like you see in the old cowboy movies where the guy comes in selling snake oil or something, right? That wasn't Jesus's gig, okay? You know, we read about in Matthew chapter 8, verse 20. Matthew 8, verse 20, it says, "And Jesus said to him, 'Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head.'" Okay, this guy didn't even have a home, right? He went from place to place, depending on the people of that area, and often just sleeping out under the stars, I would imagine. John chapter 2, verse 11. John 2, 11, it says, what am I looking at here? "The beginning of the signs that Jesus did in Cana of Galilee," okay, "and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him." The reason I read this, and I'll read it again once you know why I'm reading it, is because I said he didn't do it to be famous, he didn't do it to be rich. Why did he do it? John tells us, and when we read through John, that's a pretty good study of some of the miracles that he did in the book of John, because John talks about this is why Jesus was here, was to prove to you that he was and is the Son of God. And you read through the seven miracles that John records, and you'll see each one has a different reason. You know, okay, he has power over nature. You know, he has power over death. You know, talking about walking on water, raising Lazarus, you know, those types of things. And they're examples of different things that he did, which shows all the facets of his power. But here it says, verse 11, we'll read it again. "The beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee," it's talking about turning the water into wine, "manifesting his glory." Okay, the reason that Christ did the miracles that he did was to show who he was. It was to manifest his glory, to show that he was and is the Son of God. All right. Let's move back from the Bible and step back. The lesson that we were given, Bill Ingram Jr. set up the class, and he gave us all lessons and said, okay, this is what your topic needs to be, this is what your topic needs to be, and it has like a little brief outline of things you can say, and or not that you can say, like a rule book, but I mean, you know, like here's the lesson, and you kind of work off of it or whatever, and pretty much everything we've done so far wasn't in the lesson, so we're getting ready to get started here. So just don't worry. I'll be done. Anyway, so talking about just Christ's influence on the world, just simple things like, you know, this is 2008. Okay, well, where did 2008 come from, right? Well, Christ was born, and then we started keeping track of time, right? I mean, just the fact of, you know, our time is based on this man's life when he was born, right? Roughly thereof. And before the fact of Jesus being born, how did we tell time? Well, the Jews counted time from creation. Okay, that's how they kept time. The Romans kept time from the building of Rome. When the city of Rome was built, you know, they'd say it's the year 150, you know, and it would be, yeah, we built Rome 150 years ago. And that's how they kept time. The Greeks kept time from the time of the first Olympics. They'd say, what year is it? Well, you know, it was 72 years ago we had the first Olympics. So it's been 72 years in our glorious history or whatever. And now, right, the world tells time by the life of this one man. And you just think of, it was so fragmented, just to back off of that point, the Romans doing one thing, the Greeks doing another, the Jews doing another. And yeah, we have other cultures that have a time that they keep, you know, like they talk about the Chinese calendar, and we talk about the Muslims, and they have a certain calendar. But what does the world use? Okay, if you want to deal with somebody in the financial world or in any other sense, what year is it, right? We just had the Olympics in Beijing. Well, I guess they end today. We're in the Olympics then. And how many little men did they have down there in their circle, right? 2008. Okay, how many little people pushing up boxes? 2008. Why? Because 2008 years ago, right? The life of Christ. That's why. Even though they got their own calendar, they know that that's not how the world functions. It functions from Christ. So just standing from that angle. Works of art, right? Michelangelo, Rembrandt, Da Vinci, Van Dyck. You know, you just name the famous artists of the world, and you can think, wow, look at all the works they did. You know, and this is not only talk about Christ, but you think about the Bible itself, right? And just the way that it's influenced the world. Michelangelo and his sculpture of the David, right? People thought, oh, the David, right? That wasn't just some guy in town that was named David, right? I mean, that was a pretty popular guy. You know, his sculpture, Moses, right? Jennifer and I were fortunate enough to be in Italy a number of years ago, and we went around and saw all these famous paintings and sculptures and everything. You know, went to the Louvre or Louvre or however you say that thing. And, you know, we saw the Mona Lisa and everything. I tell you, that Moses is something. Boy, the veins in the leg and everything. When we were there, the tour guide told us that Michelangelo, when he finished it, after all the great works he did, he took his hammer and he hit it to make a little chip in it because he said it was so perfect he thought it was alive. So, but anyway, that's beside the point. But just the fact of all the influences that the Bible and Christ have had on the world and just art. We think about literature. You know, there's more books written on the life of Christ and his influence and the life of Christ and the Bible than any other subject in the world. And you think about famous writers like Hemingway and Tennyson and Longfellow and Dickens and Shakespeare and just the influence it has on them. You know, Shakespeare alone had 1,300 references to the Bible in his writings. We look at multitudes of books have had symbolism to the Bible. I picked out one that I found on the internet. Let me see, where am I at? The Old Man and the Sea by Hemingway. A couple of examples there. The main character in that book, if you haven't read it, is called Santiago, and the guy's out. He's fishing, right? The Old Man and the Sea. Anyway, in that book, you see Santiago, and he goes through a very long period of time. I think it's something like 84 days or something. Anyway, a very long period of time where he hasn't caught a fish, okay? And he's out there all by himself, and he's hungry, and basically he's fasting, and it talks about him looking into himself and you know, like a spiritual type thing. This references back to symbolism of Christ, right, when he was fasting in the wilderness, and he was having that time of spiritual time with God. Another example in that book is Santiago. You know, there's a storm that comes, and he has the mast of the ship, and he's carrying it across, and he keeps falling with the mast, a symbolism of Christ falling with the cross. And it also talks about Santiago, and he's pulling on the ropes, and how he's struggling, and his palms begin to bleed. And so, you know, just examples of how literature and so forth, you know, Christ, the life of Christ, has influenced literature as an example of the fact of how much influence he has. I mean, as far as I know, nobody's written a book about me. So, you know, we all want influence, right? And then, you know, you could just see how Christ's influence is massive. Let's see, where are we at? Oh, yes, a poem. I pulled out this poem that I found, which I thought was great. This was actually in the lesson, too. It's called One Solitary Life. One Solitary Life. An anonymous author. It says, talking about Christ, it says, "Here is a young man who was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another village. He worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30, and then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never owned a home. He never had a family. He never went to college. He never put his foot inside a big city. He never traveled more than 200 miles from the place he was born. He never did one of the many things that usually accompanies greatness. He had no credentials except for himself. While he was still a young man, the tide of public opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. He was turned over to the enemy, to his enemies, and he went through mockery of a trial. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only things he owned, his clothes. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave, and through the pity of a friend, and this is a little old, through 19 centuries wide, have come and gone. Today, he is the central figure of the entire human race, and the leader of the column of progress. I am far within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched, and all the knaves that ever sailed, and all the parliaments that have ever sat, and all the kings that have ever reigned, all of them put together, have not had the effect that this one life has had upon the earth, this one solitary life. So that kind of sums up. I could have just read the poem, and then we could have had donuts or something. But, exactly. I think that poem is very indicative of what I've been trying to say in the influence. I mean, you think about it. The things that were in the poem, he wasn't of great fame of what we would think of today as far as being born to a certain family or something. I don't think I mentioned this. I was going to mention it, and I thought, well, I don't know. But have you seen the news stories with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie? You know, they're having the babies, or maybe they had them. I don't keep up with that. But maybe twins or something. I don't know. I got people at work, anyway, they're having these kids, and, everybody wants to take a picture, right? Oh, we want the picture of the kids. We want a picture of the babies, you know? So now the movie stars, I guess they got smart. They said, well, whoever wants a picture of the baby, tell you what, we'll just go ahead and sign you up now, and you come in and you can have the first picture. They sold the pictures of their baby for $10 million, you know? So whoever gets, somebody's coming in, Time Magazine people, something. They're going to come in and take pictures of, Angelique holding the baby and stuff, and $10 million. But you think about, that's what our society is circled around now, right? And, who's going to remember little Tuesday or whatever they're going to name her, one day? Hopefully she'll have a good influence, but I don't know. Yes, Walter. Okay, that'd be wonderful. I hope so. They're feeding our gossip, so hopefully it's going to a good cause. Was that a bell? Yeah. Okay. All right, so we'll move quickly. I'm going to say a few things about, we've mentioned some things, obviously Christ has to do with the Bible, right? But the influence of the Bible itself on our society. I guess I'll mention this. This was in the little packet that Bill gave me. It says that the Bible has had a tremendous influence everywhere it's ever gone. A quick example is the story of the African cannibal, supposedly a true story. It says that there was a European was traveling in Africa, and he came to this village, and he met this African man who was reading, and then the European says, well, what are you reading there? And the African says, well, I'm reading the Bible. And the man says, oh, that book has long been out of date in my country. We don't read that. I'm surprised that you all would even have that book here. And the man says, well, if this book wasn't here and if I hadn't been reading this book, you would have already been eaten, because that was our society before we got this book. So it has some positive influences in our society. Real quick, talk about some things that I had read about on the internet, talking about just the Bible in our society. We read, if you went to the seminar last week, or if you're here last Sunday, you obviously saw how the founding of our country was huge based on the Bible, right? So I won't regurgitate any of that information. But I read recently where it talked about public high schools and how the Bible is getting back into the public high school, not to be taught as the inspired word of God, but to be taught because more and more college professors are saying that ignorance of the Bible is causing ignorance in our society, because you cannot function intelligently in our society if the Bible is not taught. So there's been a number of textbooks that have come out to teach it as a historical book and as a literature book, because of that, just the fact that you cannot function properly. I'll read Chicago Tribune, 2006, June. There was an article entitled, "College Professors Say Bible Knowledge Gives Students an Edge." In the article, it says, "When public schools decline to impart knowledge about such an important subject as the Bible, they are not doing anything to preserve the separation of church and state. They are merely failing their students." One atheist girl in one of the classes They went around and interviewed a bunch of the high schools that were teaching it. One atheist girl that was taking the class, she says, "If somebody is going to carry on a sophisticated conversation with me, I'd rather know what they're talking about as opposed to looking like a moron and fighting my way through it." You know, she can't even function in conversations. And she talks about some of the issues that her friends talk about. She doesn't even understand why they're important. One thing, the Bible literacy program did a study, and they said that 40 out of 41 of the best teachers in the country from 10 states, they went around, 40 out of 41 of these high school teachers say Bible knowledge confers a distinct educational advantage, and they say that fewer than a quarter of their students have any are Bible literate. A couple examples, I'll jump down near the end. Things that they're talking about is when you're carrying on a conversation or you're reading some sort of reference. Well, like we saw last week, all the things to do with founding fathers, right? And speeches that presidents make, like Reagan's famous, you know, a shining city on the hill. Well, what does that mean? Well, it's Matthew 5, right? And they're talking about so many things that it confers when someone says a statement. Like I thought of, try to think of a few statements. He has his own cross to bear. What does she think? She can walk on water? It's a David and Goliath battle. I wish I had the wisdom of Solomon. They're going to be baptized by fire. Look out for that guy. He's a snake. It's an eye for an eye, right? Don't trust that guy. He's a Judas, right? That kind of thing. You know, just simple things. You're in conversation and somebody says something and you're like, you don't get the full reference if you don't understand it. And so I think that speaks to just how influential the Bible is, that if you can't even function in a society, and of course you get along. And I've heard people say, and in some of this stuff, they say, well, of course I understand, you know, I kind of get the gist of what's going on. But do you really understand the full amount of what's going on? I don't know that I have time for this, but I'll mention this, I guess. I won't read it. But, you know, when Christ was dying on the cross, and at the end where he talks about, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, right? And then people thought, oh, he's calling Elijah. We know that that wasn't, what he was doing. You know, he was referencing back to the Old Testament. And there was so much more of a reference that meant. If you go back and you read the verse that he was referencing, then, you would get the full meaning of what he was talking about. And before I let you go, I ought to give you the verse. Yeah, Psalms 22. You know, if you go and you look at Psalms 22, verse 1, and then you skip over to verse 14 and read from there, you'll know exactly what he was talking about when he said that. And that's the way it is in society if we don't have a full understanding. All right, thank you.